Honorable Jake Susana, as well as Honorable Tico. is one. Ito one, no? Ito one. Ang mga atin sa maratan sa nadamsig. Arasig ng attraction sa aming church. Ito po, ito one, no? Mr. Parachi, the food is always to democracy. You are leading the dedication today, of course, as a new big one of the two. But your senior in GD is involved in the town today. Are there anything that you would like to speak to before I end all the good
Thank you, Chief. I think we should move to the presentation and we will make comments.
Thanks a lot for that.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. I want to thank you for the opportunity given to me to present the annual report for 2010-2011. And I need to say right from the onset that the chairperson of Humanity Council, Professor Cesar Mabidela, will be joining us. He took an early morning flight from Port Elizabeth, and about 30 minutes ago he called from the airport in Cape Town, stating leaving the airport, so we'll be joining the meeting, and they want to do some closing remarks there, that will depend on him. And also to indicate that I have two colleagues here, seated next to me is the Chief Operating Officer to Majesty, named Eugene Rabe. This is Eugene Rabe, Chief Operating Officer. And to Majesty is in charge of all the professional work of the organization. Next to Eugene Rabe, we have Mr. Jeremy Thomas, Chief Financial Officer. He's in charge of finances and corporate services at the university. I'll be sharing the presentation with the two colleagues. We assume, Chairperson, that the annual report has been read, and we are going to just give the highlights of the annual report. We are not going to give a detailed presentation. The presentation is going to focus on a summary of the shareholder mandate of the majesty, the external environment and how it impacts on the organization, organizational performance per unit, which will be done by both Lady Gina Rade and Mr. Thomas. And the Chairperson will also touch on the readiness of the organization to quality assure the coming high-stake examination requirements. And we appreciate the challenges that the committee faced on the previous occasion when we were not able to present. On the state of readiness, the candidate examination. The Chief Financial Officer will present on financial information, and I will briefly touch finally on the current issues and look forward. And hopefully, the Chairperson of Humanity Council will also do some concluding remarks, as will be joining us during the course of the presentation. Now, Humanity's mandate is determined by two acts, namely the National Qualification Framework of 2008 and the General and Fair Education and Training Quality Assurance Act of 2001, amended in 2008. Now, Humanity is going to report today as a quality council, as opposed to its previous presentation as an organization in transition, although there are measures which still require clarification, as will be indicated in the report. Chairperson, the work of Humanity is focused on the following areas, qualifications and standards. And regarding the qualifications and standards, we are focusing on the development and management of a draft framework of qualifications. And this we do in collaboration with the South African Qualifications Authority and the other teams, namely the CCTO and the Council on Higher Education. And we do this supported by the relevant policies and processes. Regarding quality assurance, the Chairperson developed the necessary policies to ensure the implementation of the quality assurance of provision. And we accredit private providers of education and training and assessment and the culture show assessment at every point. And once the learners have qualified for SRT qualification, we certify their achievement through the issuing of certificates. And we also, regarding information checkers, maintain a database of learner achievement and learners' medals. And we submit such data in a format determined in consultation with the South African Qualifications Authority for recording on the National Learner Records Database. We fulfill our research mandate by commissioning and publishing research on issues of importance to the development and implementation of the PAS framework. We also have to advise the Minister of Education, that is the Minister of Education and the Minister of IT and Human Matters, relating to the framework of qualification that we are in charge of. And also, we collaborate with SAPA and other QCs in terms of the National Qualification Framework. And we have also established cooperative relationships with professional bodies, and we do advocacy for the sub-framework of qualification that we have charged on. Now, we have looked at the external environment and how it impacts on the way of humanity. While we maintain the old and routine quality assurance work, Humanity has also had to accommodate development of functions to support the new excellence mandate. There are certain aspects in the macro environment that have affected the Humanity's work, and these are as follows. The passing of the NPF Act in 2009, which has changed the roles and responsibilities of the various bodies in the quality assurance landscape. The role of SAPA is no more what it used to be, and this has impacted on what is getting additional responsibilities, which initially were the responsibilities of SAPA. Also, the amendment of the Gensetqua Act in 2008, giving us an extended mandate which has required more capacity for the organization and the review of Humanity's position and approaches. That amendment has called for us to review our positions and approaches on our work. The amendment of the Skills Development Act and the establishment of the CCTO, with mandates that impact and overlap with the mandates of humanity. The amendment of the Higher Education Act, approaches that also impact on humanity's work. The NCAP implementation framework from the head, which puts pressure on quality development in an environment that is uncertain because it is changing. The framework of human has not been designated shattered, and this leads for further uncertainty. Once the framework of qualification is not designated and gathered, this creates a lot of uncertainty for the organization and for the people that we serve. The conceptualization of the post-school system through a green paper process initiated by the Department of Higher Education and Training. And the school is nearing completion, and this is going to impact on humanity. The review of the National Certificate Vocational NCV through a ministerial task team that has been put together. This review has not been completed and is moving very slowly, and whatever outcome is going to come out of that process is going to impact somewhat on the work of humanity. The revision of the NCOS with the Quality Council for Trade and Occupation, CCTO. The revision of the school curriculum through CAP. And the varying views on the nature of standard setting and quality assurance, whose role it is. Is it the role of UMADUC? Is it the role of the Department of Education and Training? Is it the role of the Department of Basic Education? Or is it the role of NIDIA? That's still to be finalized and debated, and this is taking on the work of humanity. Now, coming to the humanity quality assurance regime for 2010-11, we believe that educational standards and quality assurance are set and maintained through a combination of processes and interventions and designed to look at our quality assurance regime, therefore, for 2010-11 to encompass the following. And I'm going to take you quickly through what we are doing to ensure that our healthcare assessment regime is correct. Evaluation and benchmarking of existing qualification. Whatever qualification we have, we continuously evaluate and benchmark the qualification and the curriculum with the other countries, with other assessment bodies all over the world to ensure that our qualifications are up to the mark. We also ensure that we issue authentic certificates and we ensure that we develop new qualifications and curriculum on a continuous basis according to the needs of the country. We ensure through external modulation processes and benchmarking that assessment exit points are often acceptable times and that the examinations are conducted in a credible manner through verifying the national and provincial monitoring system and that is examined curriculum. Ensuring that the standardization processes are reliable, consistent, and standardization decisions are passed. The honorable members will recall that it is being evaluated closely, the standardization decision that has been taken. When we did standardization at the end of last year, we were not aware that it was going to be closed to the South African public. And when we had to, we were not found wanting because they did everything according to the book. Because our standardization processes are reliable, consistent, and we ensure that the decisions that have been taken there are kept. We also attend target institutions, schools, SET colleges, and other centers, and target assessment bodies to offer and assess qualifications that we certify as we manage. Chairperson, I'm going to hand over to Mayor General, the Chief Operating Officer, and he's also going to comment on the state of readiness of Umaru Quality Assurance Examination. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thanks a lot, Councillor. You might take over. Good morning, Madam Chair, and members of the Outreach Committee. I'm going to start by reporting firstly on the, well, perhaps I can just say that we have four professional units in the state of Mozambique that support the standard safety and quality assurance work. And in the shifting mandate, in the way in which the mandate has shifted, I now begin with qualification curriculum and certification unit work as of last year. And I think maybe it's a point I really need to make, because in fact it's taken me a long time to realize exactly what this shift in mandate has meant. Previously, Maluti's work was primarily focused on quality assurance. If one now goes to the NQF Act, you see that quality assurance is mentioned, in fact, in only two lines of that Act. Maluti's new role is focused now primarily on standard setting and qualifications, and the quality assurance part is in support of those qualifications. So I think that the role of our unit that deals with these qualifications and the standards of curriculum and certification needs to be foregrounded, and that is why I'm beginning with that particular area of work. The role of the unit called QCC, the Qualifications, Curriculum and Certification, is to ensure and enhance the status and quality of the qualifications in order to certify. And I think you are aware of what those are, perhaps I can just go through briefly what they are. It is the old senior certificate, which has been extended until 2014. It is the national senior certificate, which is the one that you are mostly concerned with. It is the qualifications in colleges, which are NCD and the N courses. And then, of course, the general education training certificate for adults, which is at level one of the NCD. Quality assuring the qualifications and their related curricula is this particular unit's contribution to the overall quality of the certificate, which Umaruti issues. The function also oversees the issuing and verification of certificates. So we do those two things. We issue the certificate and we will then verify the authenticity of the certificate as well. In terms of the actual work done in this last year, there's been quite a lot of emphasis, obviously, on policy development. More recently, the Minister of Higher Education has issued guidelines on the work that needs to happen in this period of transition towards fully implementing the NQF Act, and a lot of that is focused on policy development. The first thing, of course, the General Further Education Training Qualifications Framework, which has been finalised and submitted to the Minister, although not regulated yet. Along with that, Maluti has developed two new qualifications. One is the National Statistics for Adults, which is an alternative metric for adult learners, out-of-school youth, people that are out of school essentially. And it's that relationship between this new qualification and the senior certificate, which has led to the senior certificate being extended to 2014, so that the new qualification can phase in and can take over from way back on the field. The reason for that is that the national senior certificate, as it stands, is a three-year qualification, and it's very difficult for people outside of school to take on a three-year qualification. And so we've developed this one-year exchange examination that's in the form of an alternative metric for adults that is proposed. In addition, there is a national independence certificate which MLUC has proposed and submitted for regulation similar to higher education, called the national independence certificate, which is a more vocationally oriented certificate also for adults out of school. Further, we've developed criteria and guidelines for development and evaluation of qualifications and curricula along with SACMA, because we're required to do that. That is still in the making, so to speak. And in this last year, we established a qualification standards committee of the Military Council to oversee all of this work around testing of development of qualifications. We've also provided advice to the Minister on the review of the National Certificate Vocational, and that part of the team has now started to work, although the work is quite slow. And of course, we've maintained our relationships with the Department of Basic Education and Higher Education, as well as the TCs, and we meet quite often in bilaterals with both departments. That's our way of work of the qualification curriculum and certification unit. I'm sorry, there was more. Yeah. I forgot. We evaluated in the last year, we've got two reports which are actually with you. The one is a report around the National Senior Certificate and the NCD, where we actually compared fundamental subjects, the standards of them against each other, so that we could see what their relative standings were and understand our own qualifications better. And also to look at to what extent the NCD was accessing people to higher education. We've also begun a study, which is now actually completed now the next financial year, around looking at whether the NCD can access learners into a learnership, into an apprenticeship or a trade test in the same way as the N courses could. That report will come to you in the next round. We were also asked by the Department of Basic Education to respond to the CAC document, the foundation phase, and we did an analysis last year and provided input. We are now in the process of actually evaluating the new CAC curriculum, but that is also in this new financial year. In terms of certifications, education systems for all our qualifications were developed and or enhanced or maintained, and all in all, and last year we issued 444,598 certificates. That is full certificates, where that does not include subject certificates and statements. And we verified 219,822 certificates in a year. So that is in terms of the QCC unit work. I'm going to now speak around the quality assurance of assessment, and that is a particularly dedicated unit. And I will talk briefly to the monitoring and assess readiness for this examination before I go into the work of the last year. The functions of this unit entail establishing, maintaining, and approving standards in policy and assessment as exit points in general further education. And in order to fulfill this, there are key processes that they roll out every year. The first is the external moderation of question papers. Now, to talk about the monitoring for 2010, all the national senior certificate papers have been externally moderated and approved. We do 100% of that. It amounts to about 360 odd papers. That has been completed. And we have conducted verification of the monitoring of the examination. The monitoring happens at different levels. Provincial departments monitor districts, national department monitors provinces. And MLUC then comes in as a next layer of monitoring, if you like, for state readiness. And so in a sense, we verify more than what we actually do for monitoring.
And in verifying that, we shadow the Department of Basic Education. This year we did 6 provinces, Limpopo, Northwest, KZN, Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, which was a problematic province, and the last exam, and the Western Cape, including the 2 private assessing bodies, which is the IEC and ERCO, which is linked to ECDO. So that has been completed, and that monitoring report has now been written up. In terms of the external moderation model, well, that's still to come. External moderation of continuous assessment, however, has been completed by MOLUSI. We do the 11 gateway subjects across the provincial departments of education, and we look at the standard of the sample of the site-based assessment tasks, as well as learner performance, portfolios of learners, or the work of learners in the site-based element. We also looked at the 11 subjects, gateway subjects, we also looked at lab orientation because that's an internally marked subject, and so that's pretty critical. And of course, standardization of assessment results comes towards the end, so we haven't done that yet. So, in terms of the set readiness, the MOLUSI has completed its work, and we are confident that the exam will roll out in the standard and routine and critical manner. In terms of the work of the last year, which would be April 2010 to March 2011, and a little bit more detail. MOLUSI quality assured 11 examinations all in all throughout the year. That's the standard every year we do that. These 11 examinations fall across the various qualifications, the National Senior Certificate, the Senior Certificate, the NCD, the N courses, and the General Educational Training adults. So the 11 is made up of examinations for those qualifications. In terms of external moderation question papers, I think the figures are there for you to see. In the case of the NEC, again, we do 100%. In the case of ABIC, yes. In the case of ABIC or the GCC, we also do 100%. In terms of the NCD, we don't do all the question papers. We do about an 85% of the question papers. Until recently, there has been a problem around finding sufficient expertise to do moderation for all of the papers. However, more recently for this year, we have appointed an additional 38 moderators. So that problem should not continue. I just want to go to some notes I made here. In terms of the senior certificate, we're doing 101 question papers. That is also a sample. And we will be increasing that sample in the next round. And then we look at the ISAT, which is an integrated summative assessment task. It's a practical assessment task, like for art or for cooking or hospitality, where they do an actual 6-hour practical exam. Those tests have also been extremely moderated, so I'm going to see a sample of those. In terms of moderation of marking for 2010, the NEC, we did 22 subjects at a centralized venue and moderated the marking. We need to give you a comparison. We did 22 out of the last 58, just so that you get a sense of the full number and the sample that we did. Moderation of marking, and obviously we wrote the studies with a high enrollment and in doing that sample. In ABIC, we did 23 learning areas, which is all of them. And NCV, levels 2, 3, and 4 of the NCV, we also did a sample. The sample is smaller for that, but that is linked to some extent to the financial limitations around that particular program. In terms of internal assessment, that is site-based assessment of 2010. It's the same as we did this year for the NEC. We did 11 subjects, a life orientation across the 9 provinces, the IED, and what was then known as OAER, changed its name to ERCO now, which is for ABIC, we did all the learning areas, just about, and in NCV again, we did a sample of 29 subjects across colleges, including the continuous assessment of those, which is then specifically moderated. In terms of verifying and monitoring the conduct of exams, for the NEC, we monitored, remember it's a verification exercise, the monitoring of the conduct of exams. We verified 162 staff But that is the third layer of monitoring. In ABET, we monitored 60 sites and NCD 46 sites across various colleges. In terms of monitoring the marking of examinations for 2010, we monitored 52 sites out of about 100, so it's about a 50% sample. And for ABET, we did 19 sites and NCD 1 central marking center with 46 sites. Satellite, if you mark the centers that were monitored. In terms of our standardization for April 2010, we standardized the 11 examinations, and obviously the reports were put out to the minister in January, February of 2011 around the process, and we approved the results of those 11 examinations. And of course, Dr. Ogmesi spoke a little bit about the release of the standardization decision. We took an unprecedented step because, in actual fact, there's nowhere else in the world with these kinds of decisions on that note to the and it was quite deranging, but it was extremely well managed, and I think it went very well, and I think it was appreciated. Then the work of the evaluation and accreditation unit. The evaluation and accreditation function is responsible for the accreditation of private providers of education, training and assessment, which means private independent schools, private equity colleges, private adult learning centres, and private assessment bodies. In this case, we have two, the IED and OCA. What they look at is the capacity of the institution to deliver on the services they claim they're delivering on, particularly related to the qualification they're offering or assessing. And we look at the quality of the enacted curriculum in terms of private providers, that is the teaching and learning. And we look at the capacity of the assessment body to conduct both practical, internal and external assessments of learner achievements, leading to issuing of registered qualifications by Evolusi, as well as the standards of assessment products and processes. So there's really two things in the assessment body: how they run the exam and how credible that is, the administration of it. But there's also the educational standards that are involved there in terms of the standards on the assessment products. In terms of evaluation and accreditation of private providers for the year 2010 and 11, new independent schools, 151 new applications were processed. Perhaps I can just tell you more, we've got about 1,500 of these schools on our books currently, and 579 were monitored. In terms of private equity colleges, 95 new applications were processed and 480 were monitored. In terms of registration, and here Umalusi is the clearinghouse for those that are also accredited by the Sector Education and Training Authority. So in order for them to be registered with the National Department, they have to come via Umalusi. So in that respect, we referred 619 CETA providers to the Department for Registration, and we referred 90 of our own accredited providers to the Department for Registration. In terms of adult learning, 9 new applications were processed and 89 were monitored. In terms of keeping, in terms of keeping up to standards. Institutional site visits. In 2010, 193 schools were visited, 175 college sites were visited, and 17 adult centres were visited. There was also a re-look at policy and criteria for accreditation of, The policy and criteria for the accreditation of further education and training institutions and adult centres was also regulated in 2010, and we were very pleased about that. Because we waited a very long time for that regulation to come through. In terms of the policy and criteria for the accreditation of independent schools, that is with the Minister for consideration right now, and we're hoping that it will comes through the regulation path shortly. In terms of the monitoring of the Independent Examinations Board against the accreditation criteria and also IRCA, those were both monitored last year, and we follow up on improvements that they expect to make, and that's done per our plan. And this unit also participates in the monitoring of the Provincial Department of Education. The two units, the Quality Assurance Assessment Unit and the Evaluation and Accreditation Unit, were quite closely together in terms of the assessment bodies, because the one unit accredits the assessment bodies and the other one checks them for their state of readiness every year. So the two things work hand in hand. The Maluti also ran pilots in terms of the convener system for standards at average level 3, and also around subject committees for the NCD and private providers. We provide support for the NCD provision in private colleges because those colleges need that support, and we've done it on the basis of the convener system. And then we've looked at standards at average level 3 as a pilot and setting standards for that level. And then the final unit to report on is the Statistical Information and Research Unit. This particular unit, for the first time, since 2009, first June 2009, research became a formal mandate for Maluti. So while our work has always been located in research, it is now formally a mandate, and we are required to research and report on issues around our qualification framework. So this particular unit conducts research identified by the organization, and also is working on a report which hopefully we can bring to you next year around indicators of quality within our mandate. So there will be quite strong statistical kinds of information coming through that. This unit also has to maintain databases of information and obviously supports all statistical work that is done in the in terms of its work for last year. The indicator report was developed in the first round. It went to council. There's been comments, but we do consider that we need more than 2 or 3 years' data, and that is why we haven't actually published this report yet. We're still waiting for more data collection on that. We did a short project on home languages last year, which fed into our standardisation. It was around African languages and the relative standards of those. And we're extending it this year. We haven't published the report. It's a simply a report that fed into standardisation. We are extending it this year to other languages, because we only did a select number of languages last year, and once we've collected sufficient data, that report will become public. We also published a report entitled Comparing the Learning Bases and Evaluation of Foundation Phase Curriculum in South Africa. We compared the Foundation Phase South African curriculum to Canada, British Columbia, Singapore, and Kenya. And then we also reported separately comparative evaluation of African languages for the Foundation Phase in South Africa, Botswana, Lesotho, Swaziland, and Zimbabwe. The Nguni language is being benchmarked against Zimbabwe and Swaziland, and the Tutsi language is being benchmarked against Botswana and Lesotho. That particular report was also at this stage internal. We're also extending the information based on that, so we haven't actually published it this way. In terms of item response theory, this has been something that's really been pursuing for quite some time. In this last year, we had training for our staff again around the theme of item response and item banking and item development. And more recently, some of our senior managers went to examination services in the US for further training on open-ended questions and designing open-ended questions. I mean, the whole idea really is to improve the way in which examination question papers are set and also, obviously, moderate. So that is report on the research for 2000, and that's the end of my report.
Okay, we've got the mission. I want to look at the thing of what to do the financial report.
Thank you. But I'd like to, before the CFO takes over, I'd like to welcome Dr. Robinson, Robert Mayer, Darwin, who received the apology that you were the airport in South.
Thank you and good morning, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members. I report on the management support structure, which is the unit entitled MSS. It is a unit that oversees all the operations within Umalusi, that consists of the CEO, the CFO, and the COO. Its responsibilities therefore fall within the office of the Chief Executive Officer and ensures that all corporate governance and of the organization is actually working after it takes its cue from the council, from the leadership of the council. This program's performance is outlined in the annual report, and it ensures that strategic plans are in place and that the organization carries out its remit. It looks after corporate governance and its company responsibility. It also provides advocacy of Umalusi's work, because the public relations and communications work reports directly to the office of the CEO. Its responsibility is also to ensure that the stakeholders are effectively managed and that relationships are ensured and improved. For the period April 2010 to March 2011, therefore, in terms of our strategic plan, business plan, they were developed, implemented, and monitored timelessly. And we have a system whereby we have a planning cycle that we developed within the organization, and that is continually monitored. And all our policies were developed and implemented after council approval, and performance of staff and organization was evaluated and monitored on a quarterly basis and adequately reported to the Department of Basic Education. In terms of organizational governance, all council meetings were conducted and scheduled. All the supporting committees and the services were rendered without any cancellations as per the annual plan. In terms of PR and communications, a communications strategy was developed and implemented, and I think the resultant issues that came out in the media have been mentioned previously, and I think it was successfully managed. In terms of stakeholder relationships, relationships have been forged and maintained with political structures. The Department of Basic Education and Higher Education, other statutory and quality assurance bodies. The next unit is the Information Technology Systems Unit. Now, this unit forms part of the corporate services, which is made up of three distinct units, subunits, namely Information Technology Systems, Finance and Administration, and Human Resources Management and Development. The IT systems can be grouped into two main categories. It's mainly systems development and support, and network and hardware support. So for the period April 2010 to March 2011, you will notice the items of hardware that have been procured, 30 personal computers, 3 servers for disaster recovery, 1 backup device for disaster recovery, 1 SAN device for disaster recovery, 170 computer components, 30 laptops, and 3 network ports. And all this equipment is installed with a service level agreement that is implemented, and all our network support and expectations were met during the financial year. In terms of software, there are 9 different applications that we utilize, and all the licenses are up to date. In terms of programming, we have a management information systems development, which is an ongoing project that ensures that operational data is utilized to measure our output, as well as monitor the performance within the various units. Then in the next section under programming is our certification system. That is the system on which we validate all the results coming from the provincial departments for certification. That includes NCB level 4 as well as the NSC system.
Let's
speak
about the course before,
yes.
Yes.
In terms of network support, we've embarked on a project looking at business continuity, which is somewhat a little bit more complex than what is disaster recovery. But we have managed to install high availability servers, and we have a disaster recovery strategy which was approved and implemented. We are now going towards business continuity, and that technically answers the question, what will happen if Umalusi building burns down tonight? How are we going to be able to continue work tomorrow? And so we are engaging with the State Information Technology Agency and other IT companies around this particular matter. In terms of finance, human resources development and admin support, starting first with finance, the financial accounting, supply chain management and asset management are the key outcomes of the finance unit, and it is reported on page 29 of the annual report, and the rest of the financials are from pages 42 through to page 69 in the annual report. It is a joy to report that we received an unqualified audit report, and that has been the history of Umalusi, and I think it's the 10th year running that we not received a qualification. All our creditors are paid within 30 days, and all our surpluses are invested with the Corporation for Public Deposits as per the National Treasury Regulations. Umalusi assets are registered and labeled, and there are no audit queries with regards to asset management or asset service management. We are, however, looking at the upgrading of our building to suit organizational requirements because, unfortunately, we are tight for space right now, and I'll speak to that a little bit later. In terms of human resources management and development for the financial year, 9 staff members received person. There were 6 in-house training that took place for all staff. 25 attended short courses. And in terms of all courses, all 86 staff benefited. We have a vacancy rate of 6% and a turnover rate of 6% as well. It's just coincidental that they were 6%. And of course, I need to reiterate the fact that the development of staff is a priority for us within the greater budget demand and beyond as Umalusi takes on its mandate and its work more progressively. In terms of financial performance for the financial year, our revenue that was collected for certification, verification and accreditation fees was 39.8 million. Our grant from the Department of Basic Education received was 17.3 million with thanks on time as scheduled. Interest and other income came to 2.2 million. A total income of 59.4 million for the financial year. Expenditure for the financial year was 63 million. Therefore, we ended the financial year with a deficit of 3.6 million. Now, I need to pause at this point and explain. Because in our approved budget, the minister approved a budget of 68 million, of which we were able to use 18.4 of our reserve funds for the year's budget. And the deficit shows that Umalusi only required 3.6 million of the 18.4 million. And therefore, it cannot be made known as a surplus due to the fact that we use our reserves. And our reserves are already in our own bank account. So it's a financial performance issue against the financial statement of position or your balance sheet issue. So therefore, the deficit of 3.6 million. In terms of our statement of financial position, Umalusi's assets total 13.9 million, which is made up of property and equipment, 13.6 million, and our intangible assets, which is our computer software,
of 320,000 rand.
Current assets total 29.1 million, made up of our trade and other receivables, which is technically our debtors, provinces that owe us money, as well as our cash and cash equivalents, which is our reserve funds at CPD, which total 23.4 million. Total assets, therefore, 43 million. And on the equity side, we then show our surplus, which is an accumulated surplus of 35 million, which is made up of our assets and our cash and cash equivalents. Liabilities, trade and other payables, creditors we need to pay, 7.6 million, and at the end of the financial year. Looking ahead at the next 3 years, then, we have a budget this year of 78.8 million, of which 15 million will be funded from our reserves. And I just indicated that we had reserves as at the end of March of 23 million. 6.4 million is earmarked for internal renovation, and Umalusi also earmarked 2 million for the adult matric project, thus leaving Umalusi without any reserves going ahead into the future. Our budget for the next 3 years, 2012, is 91 million, 2013, 105 million, and 2014, 118 million. It's a year-on-year increase of around 16%, going down to 12% by year 14, as Umalusi continues its work. The next slide is with regard to our total income since the inception of Umalusi. And notice that Umalusi received a grant, its first grant from the department in 2002, which was 1.5 million, which was 11% of its total income. The grant went up progressively to 2009 to about 31% of budgeted income. 2010, the year that we've just come out of and that we're reporting on, our income was 59 million and the DBE grant 17.3 million, which is 29% of our budget. This current financial year, the grant is 23% of our budget, and you will notice that looking ahead into the years to come, the grant is getting smaller and smaller in terms of the budget that is increasing based on the fact that we're taking on our work progressively as the years progress. And I think it's just a matter for highlighting. We have discussed our grant with the Department of Basic Education, and we have taken it up with the National Treasury, and interventions are in place to look at the increasing of Umalusi's baseline allocation in the years to come, which is very, very good news. Therefore, Chair, I then hand over to our CEO for the concluding remarks.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Thomas.
You may be Chairman, I need to just conclude by indicating that the issues that have been raised previously in this house regarding the funding of Umalusi have been addressed in the department, and Umalusi is finding joy in the department supporting the proposals that Umalusi has put on the table. We indicated to the department that with a declining grant standard, that there is a need for us to move from the certification fee model to the quality assurance levy model, or to increasing its baseline allocation. The department does not have appetite for the quality assurance levy. It is in fact now supporting in our negotiations with Treasury a substantial increase of monthly baseline allocation. We'll see how the discussions go. We are expecting feedback by the end of October, early November, to see what the Treasury has approved in this regard. We have provided cases of this option in our budget proposal to the department, and should the increase in our baseline allocation not be available for 2012, 2013, we'll be left with no alternatives as an organization but to dramatically increase the syndicated fee to fund future years. The motivation of Umarusi and the department has been well received thus far by National Treasury, and we'll see what the outcome is. Certainly, we continue to hear Umarusi working towards the amelioration of relations with other chiefs through collaboration with them. I sat as the CEO in the CEO forum of SAPWA, Umarusi, GCTO, and CAG, and the CEOs of all these MCF organizations are serving in each other's boards and councils. I serve in the SAPWA board, serve in the GCTO board, I serve in the CAG board, and the CEOs of these other councils are also serving on the Umarusi Council. The chairperson of Umarusi Council and the CEO are standing in the NCF forum, which is chaired by the Minister of High Education and Training, where all the chiefs and SAPWA are also represented. I have regular bilaterals with the DGs of the two departments, the Department of Higher Education and Training and the Department of Basic Education. And I also have quarterly meetings with the senior officials of the department to deal with all operational issues regarding our work. Chairperson, with your kind permission, as indicated earlier, the chairperson of Umarusi Council may want to do some closing remarks. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, esteemed members of this portfolio committee, elected representatives of the people. It is always a very special occasion for us to come and account to you as elected representatives of the people on the work that we are entrusted with. Commenting on the value and importance of education, I was deeply admired and highly revered former President Mandela had said something along the line. It is through education that a child of a minor can become ahead of that minor. And it is through education that a child of a laborer can become a president of a great nation. Our democratic constitution declares that every person in this country has the right to quality education, and it further compels the state to make FAPE progressively available to all citizens. Chairperson, it is a truism that education is the single most important tool that we have to make it possible for every person to change their socioeconomic condition. Education is a sine qua non for the long-term sustainability and stability of our democratic order. It is only through access to quality education that every person in this country will be able to engage meaningfully and productively in a fulfilling and rewarding life. I'm saying this to underscore what is patently obvious to the esteemed members of the portfolio committee, the importance of education. Just a few thoughts that I want to leave with you. I know my colleagues have touched upon the nitty-gritties of what Manusi is doing. But I do want to locate what we do as Manusi within a broader framework of ensuring that we have quality education. First, as a nation, we must eschew mediocrity. Let us eschew mediocrity. Let us raise the quality of education in a very meaningful and sensible way. The struggle that was waged in this country for years was not for access to mediocre education. It was for access to quality education. Two, let us invest in any child's development and foundation frame education. For Manusi, quality assured grade 12 assessment. Four ministers of education set up a ministerial committee on which I was very privileged to serve, looking at the retention capacity of our schooling system. It was frightening to learn that just a little more than a quarter of young people who start grade 1 eventually reach grade 12. Just a little more than a quarter. So what we are talking about here and the work of Manusi only applies to a little more than a quarter of the young people who start grade 1. It is important that we invest in any child's education and foundation place so that the young people can have a solid foundation for them to succeed in education but also in life. Thirdly, let us raise expectations. Let us raise expectations of our young people, but let us also raise expectations of our. I have commented on numerous occasions that it is important that we raise the bar. To be honest with you, to make 30% and 40% as a pass mark and a combination of those is not good enough for me. As a great expectation, one thing I can tell you, if you raise the expectation, young people will rise to the occasion. They will always perform to the level of expectation. I think as a nation, we have very low expectations of ourselves. And that manifests itself, thirdly, in the sporting field. Our rugby team was kicked out, notwithstanding the fact that their possession was about 75%. How do you explain that? There's a psychological barrier that we have to overcome as a. Our soccer team was kicked out of the continental competition. We are the powerhouse of this continent. We invest in education far more than most African countries, other African countries do. But the returns that we are realizing in our education are nothing to be proud of. So let us raise expectations. But let us raise expectations of ourselves as individuals and as members of this democratic society. Fourth, let us improve the quality of teaching and learning. It is almost no useful purpose to condemn and demonize the teachers that we have in the classroom at the moment. Anyone who knows and understands the history of this country will attest to the fact that for a black person you had about 5 possible career options before you. You could be a teacher, you could be a nurse, you could be a security guard, you could be a policeman or a policewoman, or you could be a pastor. That indicates the limited choices that The teacher that you have in a classroom today never had good quality teaching modeled for them. I want to defend them. Their inadequacies are not of their own making. This is part of the legacy of our story past that we all need to grapple with and need to work with these teachers and make sure that we improve their subject content knowledge and that we improve their pedagogy. For as long as we make it their problem that they are not able to teach competently, we will not be able to cross that barrier. To a certain extent, we must assume collective responsibility as a country that these teachers who are in the classroom are a product of our society. And we need to defend them, we need to provide them with space and opportunities for them to develop into the kind of a teacher that we would like to have in front of our children. I'm just sketching these because for me those are the bigger issues. Quality assurance needs to be located within our national efforts to acquire, to make sure that every young person has access to quality education. Our role as the quality assurer comes right at the end, as I indicated, at grade 12. Like that there's some things being done to deal with the lower grade. And our approach to quality assurance is not in the compliance tick-box mode. It is one that engages critically and forcefully with the issues of quality education. Once again, we welcome the opportunity to engage with you, the elected people, elected representatives of the people, and we commit ourselves to a challenge to improve the quality of education in this country. Young people in this country deserve better than we have been able to deliver so far. I thank you, sir.
Thanks so much for the presentation of and I would like to thank you for the comprehensive report and also for the expert your closing remarks. I would like to open the meeting now to questions. We'll start with on the chain. Mishwana Makubera Rashishi. Anyone else? Mr. Smile, Honorable Smile, Hanyaku, Honorable Hanyaku. And then the last will be the Honorable Dina. We'll start with Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank Honorable very much for the presentation. And I would like in particular to thank Dr. Mabizera for his closing remarks because of the spirit that he has brought his intellect to the challenge of education in the country. And I agree wholeheartedly with him, but I want to ask him a question. When you speak about raising expectations, I agree with that. And the most immediate practical issue that comes with it is how one raises what is considered to be a pop. I'd like to ask you what that is. What do you consider to be a pop? Because clearly, if you expect somebody to pass a third of the knowledge, that is not a pop. To pass mathematics, you need to have commanded your subject, and the money will always be 50%. So the question is, what is the past? But now I like to say, you cannot simply latch it up the mark without not investing in the quality of teaching in the way that you suggested. And you cannot just raise the mark in one shot. You need to have a calibrated increase over a period of time. So if you move from 33% to 50, you cannot do it for next year. You have to calibrate the increase per year, and you have to match that with improving the quality of teaching, which means that teachers have to have access to good, well-managed, incentivized in-service training, given the fact that the teachers we have are the teachers we have, and so we have to invest in them. So my question to you is very straightforwardly on the record, what do you consider to be a part?
Thank you, and I would like to thank both of your members. I have a question. The first one goes to you. Thank you.
I thought
I could have been shot. Well, there's no page exactly, but you spoke of 11. No, the first time you spoke of the exam, they are not regulated. If that's what it was called, they are like not regulated. No regulation for them, unless if I miss it. And I'm thinking, if I miss it, you correct me, what are the regulations of? What can we do about this learning group? Because, they are like learning group out there. And I know if the person is not well posted, that they talk to, they will definitely put it online. And the next one is the 11th exam. The 11th exam that was conducted, unless if I'm not counting correctly, on that particular thing. Because I think there are 8, but then I took on the 11th exam. There's no thing, but quality assurance. You see where I'm talking about. That's the other thing that I wanted to check with you. And finally, on this, the last speaker, we were actually, I think, we moved with it, but that's the reality, you know, the truth in Africa. But I was thinking, how do we bring in the parents? Or the parent or the community to participate to improve this quality. Because I don't believe quality education can emanate from the platform alone. We have to talk of the qualification of the teachers. And we're also talking of, I believe, of foundation. Faith is very important, being very important. And once the foundation is not okay, well, we mean that maybe influence and control is that. But the system, unless it's something changed, during the years that I was out of business, it's like those who are highly qualified, your doctors, they go and they are testing or testing things and stuff. Why don't we have them at a foundation stage? Like I think I've seen in America, in Ohio, and
thank you very much.
Thank you a lot, and it has been an order for me to as well thank the wonderful presentation to me for the that you as well received unqualified report from the Auditor General that shows that that is working well, because you have said the thing, you never got any qualified and for submission of books, whether it's the organization that is small and people to money, whatever, or it's in
for me, I'm not after I have the conditions. It's clear that they may have business who might not have been ourselves to talk to me. And I think we're going to be but the last point is present. Ultimately, people that are changing and so on, there are many other women that want to new generations got to be there. But all I'm saying, I'm agreeing to the extent that it can't always be that in the past, in the life. And they need to rectify that. Needs a lot of effort and responsibility. You must not shy away from that and want to dissociate because we are now in the leadership with what happened in the past. You must handle that in a responsible manner. Thank you.
Thank you. The Honorable Rishishi.
Thank you, Professor, and thanks for the both presenters. And I'm happy that Uma Lucy is ready for the system and they told us about the region. And then, Professor, I just want to know about the independent group. How often do Uma Lucy monitor? Because they are independent group. I just want to say, if they are ready. Directly about the result and the independent group. And then again, clarity on the Mexican Adam. I didn't get it clear on that one. And then on the Mexican Adam. So thanks.
Thank you,
Chair. Let me also say to Maruti that from a personal point of view, your presentation was very good, and it convinced me that that you concentrate on the task at hand. I'm also sensing urgency for consistency. And then, for me, it is also important to know that you are, although you are confused at this stage. To what you should be doing. Among the confusion, you still see cooperation. And I think that maybe that will help you for those things to be successful. Having said that and mentioning the confusion, maybe confusion is not the right word, but well, let me explain that. You are requesting or you want to have clarity on what your mandate should actually be against the expectations that are coming towards you. But my understanding is that Uma Lucy seeks to have an overall position on quality assurance and not, you know, having others like maybe the QCTO and the other one in higher education also. So that there's one South African with regard to education and training that looks after it. I may be wrong with this, you need to just put it. Then coming to what Prof said, I'm very much encouraged to say that it is the business of Uma Lucy to look at quality in education. What you have expressed, I fully want to support it. But then the question comes to me with regard to teacher training. Do you think there's a need for the private companies, the private sector to come on board to assist the teacher training? Even those that are currently in the system for reorientation and for whatever, and coming to the leading new teacher. Then the research
there is a research with regard to Spa Foundation Phase, and it was presented at the seminar. I don't know which seminar and where can we find the sort of information. If it's internally stuff, then maybe at a later stage we can get that information. But while some is at Foundation Phase, and you said it, Prof, is that the investment in the Foundation Phase must start in next year. It cannot be, you know, related again. That's why I asked the minister yesterday in the private capacity whether she will consider next year to in great art, for instance, only to allow qualified teachers and not unqualified teachers in grade one. It's a huge task, but I think we need to start. So then, whilst I'm talking about the policy in the ECD as well, have you maybe considered looking at what is happening in grade R? What policy is happening in grade R? Because as far as I can know, as I remember, there is an absence of a monitoring and evaluation tool for grade R in South Africa. I think it's only the West Indies that currently assigned in that regard. Then, Chairperson, the way forward, the funding model, and the unqualified report, thank you very much for that. But you are actually not giving us a good sense of what you want. You say it's either this or this. So my question is that, what is your preference on the funding model and why, if you have a preference?
Thanks a lot,
Honorable
Kanyako.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, I consulted a little bit with my neighbor here. I nearly betrayed my ignorance by asking a question that would not really be relevant to this body. So I feel I must just withdraw, because the question has to do with the apprenticeship training, and he advised me with it. It is not their area. Thank you very much.
Something might help.
You think so?
Yeah.
Well, he urges me to go on. The issue is about the training of apprentices, especially the taste test at Olifant Fontaine. What do you call that place? Indere issue. Okay. Now, one would want to know the pattern that is there. Because we hear the country complaining all the time about, a shortage of artisans in this country. We have FBT colleges all over the country, although to some extent there is criticism about the training there, where theory, dominates more than practical work. Because when you want to train an artisan, emphasis should be on practical work and not on English, Africans, and all those other things, which are not very, very relevant for, giving this person the skills that is needed in the country. So my question is about the pass rate. I don't have an idea about what happens there. Maybe if you have some idea, even if it's not your terrain, maybe you could share some information with me so that I'm satisfied. My biggest problem is, at the FBT college, the training there, emphasis is on theory. They want to speak good English, but they don't produce good programs when they go outside. Thank you.
Is the
No, it has to be any duty. Or the outside authority in place? No. In your own spare time. For example, emergency. That's what I'd like to know. And if it's not authority, whether it is, you know, there are problems that come to operational issues. Because I think this is important. That should be clarified, because I think every member touched on that. Because the smile is actually used quite well. And I think we should have used, you know, clarification instead. Then we started to do this maintaining sense report when it comes to our own languages. And we spoke about doing research on a certain African languages. But you are extending it. Yesterday, and quite a number of times in some of the departments, we are speaking about sign language. And World Sign Language Act included. Because, you know, they all like to have their own language. English, what we call Afrikaans, is German. And that's how it's our language for the parents learn to sign. Well, the standard itself. So let's speak to that. And then when it comes to your vacancy rate, you know, what are you doing about that? And the plan by impact on the work you are doing. I think that's your question. My answer to the question and decide for what you're going to do.
Thank you, Chairperson. We'll start with the CFO and then the COO. Then I'll follow and the Chairperson will close to the round. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. With regards to the questions around the funding and the funding model, what is our preference and why? I think we started this conversation a few years ago. Indicating to the department and the National Treasury what the various options are to ensure that Umalusi obtains the necessary funding. One of them was to move away from the certification fee, which was a concept where only those learners who have passed in the system pay a fee for obtaining a certificate at the end of their learning. The quality assurance levy is a model that looks at all the learners in the system for which Umalusi has provided some services, whether it's moderation of a question paper, whether it's monitoring of the examination, and then levy a fee to encompass and capture all the learners that are in the system. Thus, the net is therefore broadened and widened, and one is then able to pick up a fee, a lower fee perhaps, but a larger number of learners, and therefore could provide Umalusi with the kind of funding that it requires. That was the second option. Then there is also the aspect of just increasing the current certification fee, because that system is already in place. And then when one looks at preference, we do receive a grant from the department, which averages around 29% of our budget, and the grants could be increased. Now, in terms of practice, at the end of the day, Umalusi just wants the required funding that it needs to do its work. Whether it comes in the form of a quality assurance levy, whether it comes in the form of increased certification fees, whether it comes in the form of an increased baseline allocation, is kind of immaterial to Umalusi, as long as we can obtain the funding we require. However, in our discussions with the department and with the National Treasury, there is more positivity towards just increasing the baseline allocation over future years. And that being said, Umalusi is happy to receive an increased baseline allocation, provided, of course, that it does cover the services and the work that we have to perform. Everything is about our mandate here. and whether we're able to take on our mandate progressively. When it comes to our mandates, we have not received funding specifically for the work we do in adult and vocational education. And so therefore Umalusi has made a bid through the Department of Higher Education to say, this is the work that we do that falls in your domain, will you fund that in future years? However, administratively, we report to the Department of Basic Education. And in terms of administrative reporting, we should also make the Department of Basic Education aware of what our needs are for all the work that we do, which is what we've done. And so Umalusi is waiting with bated breath to see what the National Treasury, together with the Department, will approve in terms of funding as we go forward. Also, the fact that we have utilized our reserve funds for operations in the past few years puts us in a very awkward position, because your reserve should technically not be used for operations. It should be used for capital work or once-off expenses that will not return. And I think as a public entity, it is essential that we have some form of reserve or some form of funding in our reserve should there be litigation, should there be a fire or theft or whatever the case may be. We won't have to run to the department to say they are done. That's my response, our response in terms of the funding model. When it comes to the issue around the vacancy rate. This has gone down again. Vacancy rate. Vacancy rate of 6%. Are a few posts. Umalusi is in the process of filling those posts, but I must also indicate that there are times where it is difficult to find the required competence for certain positions within Umalusi. Because in terms of quality assurance, there's no other quality assurer out there that Umalusi could poach from that does the work that Umalusi does and has the approach that Umalusi has. So when we employ people, it is a matter of capacitating people in order to ensure that they are able to then perform their task. But those vacancies are in the process of being filled.
It is 11 examinations because for the senior certificate we do one exam and we start a rerun. For the NSC we do one and we do a rerun. Then we do three for the end courses, based rather than quarterly. And then we do two for the NCD, which is written as a supplementary. And then we do two for the GCC, which is the adult June and October. So when I say 11, it takes all of that. In terms of the external environment questions that were asked around the role of MEDU versus Umalusi, actually we had a meeting recently with MEDU to discuss exactly that. You know, what are our respective roles? And while we may not understand each other totally at this stage, but MEDU is really embryonic at this stage, and I'm not 100% sure that they don't even know what the tool is. It is clear that we will work together very closely, but that we don't overlap really. There's an area of overlap a little bit around independent schools and evaluation schools, but you know, we really willing to provide them with the information we collect about VERSA. But I think where the main difference comes is this, is that media is about school improvement. And Umalusi is about accreditation. And you might say, well, accreditation is also about school improvement. Well, it is. But the fact is, there are many, many schools who really can't accredit because they're not good enough for to be accredited. They simply don't meet the standards. So somebody needs to pick up those schools. Somebody needs to develop those schools. And that is, as we see at the moment, in a very superficial way, of how they would have a different role to play than really. Okay. Thank you. So there has been some dialogue around it, and we certainly are looking at working together in some way. Perhaps I can just link that also to the question that was asked about independent schools, because NIDA will include independent schools in terms of evaluation and improvement. And the question was asked around independent schools, well, how often is the ministry monitoring and are we happy with their results? Of course we're happy with some of these results, but we're very unhappy with other results. And in that sense, last year when we monitored schools that were underperforming. And by underperforming meaning those that got less than 60% pass rate, independent schools. And we went back this year to go and see whether our visits and our evaluation of them had any kind of impact on and improved their results in the And in fact we found that there's quite a large improvement. We've just gone back again now. I haven't got the final report in yet on that difference. But it seems that the fact that we actually just paid attention instead to those underperforming schools, who by the way are not accredited, but who are because they're just not good enough to be accredited. But we felt we needed to do something about it and that's what we've done. But you know, obviously it was reasonably small scale. Now we would see for instance that actually is needed work in the area. And that we wouldn't be necessarily involved in that ultimately, but at the moment that's what we would do. So those two things are linked. Then around the mandate and the shift, and when did I realize and when did the mandate shift? Well, you know, with Melissa's work, it's been a subtle shift. It's not a dramatic shift. It's a kind of a slow, a big shift through very slightly. And so in a sense, it didn't apparently affect the work that we were doing. Except to say that there always comes a day when the penny kind of drops and you go, oh my, this is actually what it means. And that was about last Monday. No, I'm joking. but you know, every time you reread the act, you see it in a new way and you kind of just go, oh, okay, I haven't quite got that next time. I'm now, but you know, and so it's a growing thing. But of course, our mandate changed officially on the 1st of June 2009. And together with SAC and the other two C's, we've been slowly moving forward and sort of in tandem, if you know what I mean. So you know, it's not as if we kind of didn't know what we were doing and then let go of the ball and drop it anyway, no. But it does have something to do with the country psychological shift as well. In terms of CSTEP program, you know, the regulations for registration of private colleges recognizes only Monuti as a quality assurer. It does not recognize teachers as a quality assurer. And so when private colleges have to be registered, an arrangement was made with the Department of Education at that stage, this was before the SLIP, that CETA accredited providers that had already been accredited by CETA would not have to apply for a reaccreditation by Monuti. That we would, however, be a clearinghouse for those providers. So if they seek registration, they have to come to us and submit us certain documentation. First, for instance, a site visit report showing that the site visit done by the speaker was good enough. There's evidence of their accreditation, evidence of their program approval, and all of that. And then on the basis of that, we refer them for registration. And yes, there is a co-responsibility to a certain extent. In terms of, so the other question about raising the bar when answered, but that's more than the chair could answer. Around the National Senior Certificate for Adults, the conception of that comes a long way. You know, that comes from about 2006, the concept of that notion. It started with the previous Department of Education, and there was a task team set up at that time, of which our previous CEO was part of, Dr. Lawana, this notion of conceiving an adult matric. And it's really based on the GDE of the USA, which is the General Education Diploma that is run in the USA for people that are out of school. And what it is a set of challenge exams. It's a four-subject qualification, a language, math, math literacy, and then a choice of other subjects. Social science, which will be a collapsed subject of history and geography, general science, which is physics, chemistry, and biology, and then there's an economic sciences one as well, which has got business studies and economics and various other, I think a bit of accounting in there. They're collapsed subjects. And how this works is that, I mean, in the ideal situation, one would like to see this based on an item banking situation, so the patients can be generated on demand, and that learners can go to a centre, and there is learning materials that they can buy, and they can study on their own if they want to, or they can go to a support centre, or they can go to some of the tuition is offered, and they can then enrol for these subjects one at a time, or two, however many they can manage, and they can sit for those exams. And there's no prerequisites for entry to those exams. But it is for people that are out of school. It's not for, it's for people who are employment or unemployed, wherever they find themselves, but in order so that they can actually get matric. I think it was kind of, you know, Dr. Lamar used to say, you're not really a South African unless you've got an eye in the book on a matric certificate. And it was trying to create access to the matric, really, where the speed of this began to grow. So over time, you know, with the change in the ministries and within the ministries and so on, it kind of was delayed and delayed and delayed, and then now, last year, the Department of Higher Education, and that's where the case is at the moment, because it's actually for after school people, part of the post-school system, approached us and said, please can you take this forward and complete this? So we have in fact completed it, and it is developed, and it's with the minister, and it should be not regulated, be published for comment, and we've already had quite a few comments, but we're just informally, if you like, but we're awaiting that process. And where is it located? At the moment it's located at the Department of Higher Education and Training, but of course I suppose there could be an arrangement between the Department of Higher Education and Training and the Department of Basic Education around it. I'm not sure. So we'll see how it's managed. In terms of researching foundation phase, there's actually been two projects around that. There was an initial benchmark project, the report where we compared it to the British Columbia, Singapore, and Athenian curriculum, South African Foundation Phase curriculum was compared. It actually came up looking pretty good. So our problem is not in the curriculum, you know, in terms of standards, really. Our curriculum was quite good. That report can be made available. We are now busy re-looking at it in the light of the case, in the light of the review of the curriculum, and the study is continuing as of today. So there will be an update. In terms of ECD, we have not actually looked at grade R as part of it. So it is maybe something which we could extend the study to, but we'll take that advice and take time out of it. Apprenticeship training, you know, I'm not that academic, so I can't really tell you how many apprentices pass or fail, to be quite honest. I can only really comment on how many people get a full N3 certificate. And by that I mean not the accumulation of subjects, but actually the full certificate is low. You don't want to know. Because that's the certificate we issue, so that's the one I can comment on. In terms of language, life orientation and the continuous assessment, what happens with life orientation, because it's internally marked, of course the standard is quite variable. And because it's so variable, and because some are very high and others are very low, we have a way of standardizing that. If the site-based assessment mark, if there's a difference of more than 10%, those marks are standardized to create that ratio between the final exam mark and the site-based. So that's how those kinds of marks are dealt with. Home language research, in terms of the sign language. At the moment, we haven't included sign language, but I think we'll also take that home with us and discuss it and see how we could possibly move in that direction. I think that the in terms of our mandate and the role of CCCO and all that, I think Dr. Rachmanetti would speak to it. Perhaps just to say, that in terms of working together with GCC around the end courses, we are working with them to recurriculate those courses. Legally, those courses belong on our framework. We've had a legal opinion on it, and that is in fact where they lie, along with us. And so we are working with them to recurriculate it. We've had three meetings, and we're working with the process. Okay, so
thank you very much, Heather. Now to briefly respond on the question of summer setting and who is responsible for that. If you look at the qualifications that we currently have on our sub-framework, the art education that we have inherited from the department. So that the curriculum was developed by the department without the involvement of humanities directly. Now the question is, humanities is a standard setting body. It is not supposed to be the one that actually spearheads the development of any curriculum and a qualification. So that as the ship is changing gradually, we have to take note of that. Previously it was stuck on the setting standard. Now it's humanities just a standard for all the qualifications on its sub framework. Now the question is, can we continue receiving qualifications from the department, or when there is a need for a particular qualification to be introduced, should we be notified by the department and then humanities develop the curriculum and set the standards? Because standards are set through the curriculum. That is the debate. Now further on, I need to indicate that we continuously have to scale the environment. Not only for threat, but also for opportunity. And as we do continuously as humanities, as we do our strategy, and how the environment is going to impact on humanities. A case in point here would be the establishment of NITU, as one of the honorable members of the society put it, and for instance, GCTO. What are the opportunities for humanities? What are the threats? How is the work of these other bodies going to impact on humanities? We have studied the NITU bill, that will serve in Parliament soon. And we have also had the opportunity, like engineers indicated, of meeting the CEO of NITU, Professor Bonn, who incidentally is the former chairperson of Umadu, and therefore understands fully the mandate of our organization as the former chairperson. Very clearly, in our discussion, it became clear that NITU is going to look at systemic evaluation. They can visit the classroom. They can look at how effective the school is running and can even recommend to the minister to close the school. They go further and check how far a school is receiving support from the district. And can also check how far the province can is supporting the district. And they can also go into the system of the head office of the Department of Basic Education. That is how broad their mandate is. So, in our discussion with Professor Bolman, in a meeting that the engineer rather referred to, there was a clear designation of scope. They are not creative. And we'll be continuously monitoring that. Unfortunately, they don't have their council or their board established because they don't have an act. So, some of the agreements that we reached on how we have to manage the independent school space could not crystallize because they can't ratify that through their board or council. Regarding the role of humanity, this would be that of the other quality councils, and that is the question of honorable member, Mr. Smith. There is also a clear definition of scope. Humanity is in charge of the sub-framework from levels 1 to 4 of the NQF, and the negotiating stage at level 5 with CHE, and CHE is willing to give up space in that regard. CHE is very clear that they take level 5 to 10, and those are the higher education institutions. And the role of the GCTO is also very clear. Where there are grey areas, like I said, we are continuously trying to ameliorate the relations and say, but this is our space, and we can get so much and not fair. We are negotiating that with them. And also, with the oversight role of SAPA as an apex body, where if there are conflicts or misunderstandings, SAPA will intervene and manage those conflicts and those relations by respecting that protocol, and that protocol has held thus far. So there is a clear role definition for all these QCs, and humanity understands the role clearly in relation to the sister organization in the NPO space. When it comes to funding, the CFO has commented on funding. My brief comment would be that where previously we did not see the light at the end of the tunnel, I would say now we have reached the mountain top. We have seen the promised land, and this is due to the help of the Impariaki, who is sitting here, who said, colleagues, I'm going to help to resolve your funding problem once and for all. Chair, I want to just appeal that Mr. Thomas should show us the slide. That shows the history of funding for money. That is the slide. If you look at this history, you realize that you have not been adequately funded. If you check from the inception of Umaruzi to
to say we generated our own income in 2001 without any grant from the department. And 2001, there was no grant from the department. And we got a pittance in 2002-03 of 1.5 million, and it has increased. We want UMALU to be adequately funded as a stationary body that fulfills a quality assurance function in the country. And we'll be happy once we reach that. Whether it is quality assurance levy, whether it is increased baseline funding, which is adequate for our work, we'll be happy with that. Medina, honorable member, we are used to situations where UMALU is used as a scapegoat. I meet a teacher in a seminar at the University of Johannesburg last week. And she learned that I come from UMALU. She said, oh, okay. We use UMALU to scare our teachers and they don't do their work. So UMALU has been used as a scapegoat. People are using us to placate whatever evil they are doing. To say, no, UMALU is used to say the thing. When UMALU knows nothing about it. Papers that are written are approved well in advance, before June by UMALU, before they are written, before they are even dispatched to the provinces and to the centers. So we are used to that kind of approach. Chairperson, I need to also indicate that in relation to the role of KC2O vis-a-vis that of UMALU, we are very clear. The role of UMALU in the system is clarified in the Jamsetqua Act. And the Jamsetqua Act says, UMALU will quality assure schools according to the South African Schools Act, SASA, other centers according to the ABET Act, FET colleges according to the FET College Act. So our role is very clear, it's defined with regard to that, according to the Jamsetqua Act, which codes these other acts that I just mentioned. I need to briefly clarify the role of UMALU in the system also in relation to the creation of the two departments of education. Where we pledged the two departments. There was confusion in 2009 after DHET was created. But the president issued a presidential proclamation that clearly demarcated the roles. And I'll quickly just mention what our role is in the system. Presidential proclamation. The proclamation says we are answerable to the Minister of Higher Education and Training when it comes to the NQF. In other words, SAQUA UMALU CGOC AG, when it comes to the NQF, we are answerable to Minister of Education and Training. But our report in mind, in terms of our strategic plan, in terms of our annual report, the proclamation says they are reporting to the Minister of Basic Education, the strategic plan, annual report, they come from the engineer. Where other sister organizations still report to Minister of Basic Education with regards to strategic plans and annual reports. Now, in terms of the services that we offer services to the Department of Basic Education when it comes to the National Senior Citizen. But when it comes to all other qualifications and all FET college qualifications, we are offering the service to the Department of Higher Education and Training. I think that clarifies the point. So that whatever hit my table and I read the correspondence, to me it becomes very clear where this comes from. The correspondence that comes out of my office is very clear where it has to go to in terms of the department. Because our roles and our relationships has been clearly defined by the presidential proclamation of July-August 2009. I want to pause here and hand over to the chairperson of the Humanities Council. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Let me just briefly preface my responses with my own view here. I am a firm believer in the power of education to change lifetimes. I honestly believe that it is education that can liberate us from the pestilences of ignorance, want, hopelessness, and despair. That is through education that we can build a winning nation. If we fail to do that, I'm afraid our future looks very bleak indeed. Let me come back to the question that was asked by Honorable James. And I know he did not ask it in a rhetorical sense. What is a power? In my earlier comments, I did make the point that we must uproot family performance. Not only in education, but in every aspect of our life. So in that context that I said, we must start to set high expectations of ourselves first, and then of others. Because if we do that, we will be on our way to building the winning nation. The first point, Honorable James, is that we must acknowledge, the first thing is to acknowledge that making 30% and 40% is not good enough. That's the starting point. But I must put this in its proper context, because some people tend to be very mischievous. They like to present this as an invention of 1994. Anyone who knows and understands our education system will acknowledge that a part of 33% or so has always been part of our education system. You can read reports from the past where you had higher grades, better grades, and lower grades, and the report will read, a certain mark has been converted to a lower grade to effect a mark. So this is not an invention of the democratic system that came into place in 1994. What has happened is that it has been brought to the surface. And we must deal with it. I'm sure most of you are old enough to remember. I wasn't there then, but I know I have read about it. In the early 60s, when Kennedy said to the Americans, "We are going to launch a person in the moon." It is that kind of leadership that one looks for. Because once you indicate what is important to the nation, that concentrates the entire focus and the entire national fight. We agree that what we are doing at the moment is not good enough. We can then agree that we need to move progressively to something that is better. But now to move to what one could consider a quality path, one, you need to be sure that you have adequately trained and competent teachers. And this is not something that you can achieve overnight. But the moment you acknowledge that we need to be aiming higher, then all the other things start to fall in place. You then look at the teachers that we have, and then also have to indicate timeline and say, after 3 years, this is where we should be as a nation. I don't hear much discussion around that. We seem to be overly preoccupied with the pathway, which worries me immensely, because at the moment, schools want to improve their culture. And they're very much worried about those who are on the pass-fail cap, just so that they have high culture. And they completely ignore those who are at the top end who need to be strengthened further to get it in better path. I know this because I am involved in downtown work. And I thought it was interesting, but I said, look, I'm not going to waste my time on those who are the past their cup. I'm interested in those who could do even better to go to higher education. So I know I have sidestepped your question, because I don't want to sit here and decide what the path is. But I hope I will. But there are people who have been very meticulous. And they have made such statements that if you have a doctor who only knows 30% of the world, would you go to that doctor? People have to be very sensible about it. You did?
Yes.
No, but on the other hand, that is a bit dramatic. But the point is made that we must raise the bar. And I think that is very, very important. The role of parents and community, absolutely. For me, quality education will only be achieved if we start to build very strong partnerships between, one, the school, the leadership of the school, secondly, parents and community, they must play an important role. Thirdly, we need to have teacher unions on board. It is very, very important that they start to shift away from fighting for the rights of the teachers and they balance that with the responsibilities that they have. And they start to emphasize on professional development of the teachers. So there is a critical role for parents and communities to play. The issue of the teachers has been commented upon, but I do hope that when we take an honest and rigorous reflection on some of the things that we have done since the advent of democracy, one of those should indicate that there are some poor decisions that have been made. Some of you will recall that some of the state entities, like ESCO, used to train high-quality artisans and apprentices. And although they have closed down and we are starting at the moment, it is beyond belief that as a country, we import welders from India. That is completely inexcusable. So, I hope that the Minister of Education will pay some attention to this, because those are the skills that this country needs, and it needs them in huge numbers. We have to reflect very honestly, and we have to be very courageous. And we really should not try to shift under the carpet some of the poor decisions that are made. Even in our own schooling system, there are some questionable decisions that are made, and we must face to them, because it is only through that critical engagement with those decisions that we can start to move forward. You know, as a nation, we are incredibly impatient. We want to reap rewards without investing in requisite resources. And I just hope we could be a little more patient and we could invest what it would take to build a winning nation. And stop obsessing about past race and the like, because that is driving an extremely illiterate behavior in this school. And I just want to caution that this continued obsession with past race and matric is causing huge problems in schools, and it is denying young people opportunities for quality learning. I hope I have responded to all the questions and to some of the questions, and then my colleagues have responded to others. The issue of FO, that is so important. Here is one subject which is meant to equip our young people with the skill to negotiate challenges in everyday life, for them to become effective and productive citizens of a democratic society. but that is not taken seriously. But these people are growing up. They have so much to learn. But I don't think that we are using life orientation as well as we should. And I don't think that we are getting the kind of benefits that we should be getting out of that. Because that should really inculcate certain fundamental values, our constitutional values, issues of social justice. See? That which makes us the wonderful people that we are, the spirit of Ubuntu, those are the kinds of values we need to entrench in these young people so that they don't think of just themselves, so that they start to think that their own future is so intricately intertwined with that of the sentiment. I don't think that we are leveraging as much as we could out of that process.
Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot. I would like to close the meeting. Is there anything that you'd like to say about action?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I just want to make a few points on the funding model and to address the question that you asked about the other departments. Basically, the Department of Basic Education is to be driving the issue of the funding. And during the request that we put in, we dealt with, it includes all funding that is required by any of the other departments. So when this matter is resolved, Umaluti will get what funding is required to carry out its functions in terms of the mandate that is there, whether it's confused or additional. It will be given that those funds. And then the ball will be in the court of Umaluti from 2012.
Thank you. That's actually a closing remark. I think it's important, Lorelyn, that our conclusion that we are on the point of the remark. Now that we don't have that in this report. And thanks for that, Lorelyn. I must say that everyone congratulated you on the unplanned science report. And that is an achievement because, roughly speaking, it's been about 60 million that you work with. And it shows a caliber of leadership that you have, you know, with me in the room. And then at the same time, what Professor showed us today, that besides, you know, the caliber of leadership, that there's humility to work in humility. And the humility to serve the people. And I think that is important. The other point that I would like to make before I go, just that I'd like to know, before I speak about what happened to me not again. That Professor, I felt the chair when you were just speaking there to Uncle James. Because I know the Uncle Mark Kubera that spoke about, you know, I'm not a college teacher, but I do have both graduate schools now too. And I intend doing another one next year to Stellenbosch. So one after for there, and now I'm going to Stellenbosch. So I felt the chair for that dialogue. For I truly was enjoying it. And I was sorry. And then with you, you know, the disclosure of the standardization of the results at the beginning of the year. I'd like to say that you, as Amalushi, Lucy, show that you are speaking in this year. You are dignity, and that you were very professional. And I think as a committee, we have to thank you for that. And I think next year, after you standardize the examination, you have an announcement that you make. that we as a committee should be part of that analysis. And members, I'm now in some of your brain for the next week now. I'd like to thank you for your season. And I'm always very proud of the committee itself. Because you never learn if any person has accent. You know, unnecessary. And then also the contributions you make. Because you show that keen interest that you have in education, about children of the country, and even education as a whole within the country. And then the department, I'd like to thank you for being present this morning, and then also leading the delegation. And even, you know, I would still like to thank you for being present. And let's carry on with the apology that we gave at the beginning of the meeting to Professor Mapasera when it comes to, you know, the last meeting we were supposed to have. And then I'd like to thank everyone on the meeting and even Professor that came from Grahamstown just to be with us today. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for standing by.
And I'll be